Okay, so today joining me on the podcast is none other than my good friend, Cade. Cade, how you doing, man?
Good, man. I always wanted to say on the podcast, we are live.
We're not live today, but, you know, this will be up within, like, a few hours or so. So it's almost, like, straight away. Now, the reason why we need to have you on, man, is because we've known each other for, what, a good few years now?
Yeah, bro. No, probably about 3-4 years. I'd say 3 years.
Yeah, in that amount of time, the amount of stuff that you've, like, gone through, like, in terms of, like, progression is, like, so much. And that was, like, the main reason of wanting to get you on here, to go from, like, literally, the first time I think I met you was, like, in Good Life, and in, like, the Good Life gym not too long ago. And then I was like, oh, we didn't really know much about each other. And then we met that one day at the photo shoot. And then since then, everything has just, like, been steamrolling from there, man. So it's good to have you on. So let's start with, you know, stripping, man. That's one of the main reasons why we got you on.
Stripping.
Yeah. So how did you get into it?
We always end up talking about stripping. That's cool because you can relate to it. But I don't know. First off, I appreciate what you said, like seeing how far that I appreciate that. It's always nice to hear from someone else. So I appreciate that. But in regards to stripping, what do you mean? Like why did I start or how did I get started or what?
Well, it's just one of the many things that you've done, man. It's just to get this thing going. Like, what was, how did you even get into it? Because I know that you were doing it for quite some time.
Yeah. So I went through a little heartbreak when I was younger. So I was like 18-year-old and I was staying this bird for a year, and then I moved over here and she moved back. So we broke up. I was all very sad about it. And I decided, when you're younger, you always want to go on a bit of a rampage. So, like, I'll just go and find as many girls as I possibly can. I thought, fucking hell, what better way to get better with women than getting paid to do it? This is actually a true story. So what I used to do, I used to watch Magic Mike constantly, and I'd learn the moves from Magic Mike. Right? This is not a joke. I'd be in front of the mirror just like, doing body rolls and things like that. And I used to go to a gay bar down to the court with my mate Mitch, right? And we made these bow ties out of, I remember we took an old college shirt you'd get from, Kmart.
Oh, yeah.
You take the top collar off, right? And then you put the bow tie on and I'd go down the court because it was a gay bar. You're allowed to take your shirt off there. Mm-hmm. So I'd walk around in the court just going, I'm a stripper. Just came from work. where we get so many girls. It was crazy. It was like moths are flames. So I thought, fuck, this is all right. Mm-hmm. And I basically just faked it till I made it. And I met some guy in a nightclub, and he was like, hey, man, you can dance, bro. Do you want to try out stripping? I thought, yeah, why not? Give it a go. I mean, I was only like 70 kilograms at the time, but, you know, back then, you know, like Justin Bieber and stripper popular. So I thought that could be a way in. So I started doing that for a long period of time. I did that for about 3 years. And then when I came to Australia, I said no more. I wasn't going to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I worked at Delicious for a while, which was a club over here, but I thought it was a little bit, I started in New Zealand, worked for a certain period of time, did a couple of radio events and like a competition where I actually won, like a stripping competition in New Zealand. So we ended up getting on the radio and then it'd get into modeling and TV and stuff like that. So that was like a short section. And then I said I wasn't going to do it again. So I came over here and I worked in a club, Delicious or whatever. But it was a different kind of stripping. It was more hustling girls to give you money.
Yeah.
And then for some reason you show them your dick. I don't know why girls would want to say that, but they did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so So one thing I was going to ask you, man, is that when I on your stage name is Carter, but your real name's Cade. Like, so why did you choose the name Carter? What was it given to you?
I always thought that was the coolest name for a mysterious white guy that you could have, like Carter. Like, I always thought that was quite cool. There's literally no other reason than that. I just thought it sounded good.
Okay.
Plus, I had a girlfriend at the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you didn't want stories of Cade coming back and to the great mind. I mean, freaking. New Zealand's a small place, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's where the stage name came from.
Okay, so was Carter the name that you always had, or was there any other names that you tried, or was it just that one?
No, it was always Carter. It was always, since I first started, it was always just Carter. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
My favourite movie was Coach Carter, so I think maybe that had something to do with it.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Probably anything. But it's always been Carter. It's never been anywhere else. Heaps of people try to get me to do the Zac Efron thing. They're like, do Zac Efron. Like, say your stage name is Zach. I didn't want to do it because it was not really something that I was interested in.
That's actually a very good point, because I'm pretty sure in the time that I've known you, everyone's been like, oh, does it do a Zac Efron this, or does it do a Zac Efron that? Now, yeah, you kind of experimented with it, but you kind of just sort of do your own thing. Anyway, so yeah, that's how I saw it. Now, you've stopped doing it for a while now, and you've moved on really, really well. But looking back at it, is there anything in particular that you miss, or is there anything in particular you wish you did differently?
No. I think it taught me a lot of life's valuable lessons. It taught me how to judge people really well.
Okay.
So I think it taught me how to steer. I think it went so toxic with it when I was doing it that it brought me back to that same kid that you were when you're a child. You know what I mean? It brings you back to that grounding and that level of self-love and care and so remembering who you are. Because in your 20s, you're in a confusing time. You're like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. You know, there's kids on the internet that are multimillionaires. I don't know shit about Bitcoin. And there's all these confusing things that are fucking your head up at the time. But you kind of go, oh, well, if I do stripping, I could get some kind of validation. And this could make me feel good. But the people that are doing it, they'll earn to sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and who's got the biggest ego, and who's can do this. And what it does, it creates this toxicity where you kind of lose a bit of yourself. So I'm glad I'm with, and I'm not saying that for everyone. I'm really not, because I've met some like really good people in that industry, but I can only count them on one hand when I've met hundreds. Do you know what I mean? So I think the only group that I reckon wasn't proper toxic and it wasn't full of bullshit is probably Top Shelf. Ironically enough, the company that you've worked for. Just because I've got respect for the guy that runs it, to be completely honest. I mean, not sucking his dick or anything, but just that he's a good bloke. So I don't mind him and his boys, because they've got a different kind of attitude. Then it's more about the show rather than the girls, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. For me, it's just about being in the group, really. There's a big sense of like camaraderie, you know what I mean? Like
camaraderie.
Yeah, you know, when you're with your guys, and every Thursday we get together for rehearsals, and then when it comes to showtime, all hands are on deck. It's group, like, rather than just individuals. Now, there are other groups out there, but just that was the one that I was so used to. And in this industry, you know, there's the people who are just in it, you know, for themselves, and that's absolutely fine. But just the reason why I'm still doing it and so stuck to it is because of the group that I work for. It's like if someone paid me an X amount of money to go do something on my own and I had to choose between that and the show, then obviously I would choose the show, because at the end of the day, those are your boys, you know. Like, gigs are going to come and go, but your mates are always going to be, your real friends are always going to be there for you. So that's one of the reasons why I kept it going. Now, that's what was insane.
I do agree with that, man. Like, I know the vibe of those guys there. So when I first started, I had a chip on my shoulder because I always thought, and this is something that you probably relate to, I always had a chip on my shoulder because I thought that they were just like the boys that I'd been with my whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's all about the pussy, fuck it, just do the show, whatever, like. But when you kind of got to know them a little bit more, you're actually like, these guys actually really like what they're doing. So that kind of made me have a step back and go, maybe it wasn't stripping, maybe it was me that learned the lessons and it was the people I was with. Not stripping in general, but it's just about who you surround yourself with. And to be fair, I mean, I've had my highs and lows and I don't regret it at all. It's taught me some of my best lessons, boy.
Yeah,
so, that's
true.
It's good.
So let's say we could do agree right now that the market for mass stripping is increasingly popular, has become saturated. I mean, I've only been doing it just over 3 years now. And in the time, you know, you know the players, you know the game. Now, I get asked the question quite often, what do you do if someone wants to start? What advice would you give to a young person who's trying to get into the industry? Like, that's something I wanted to ask you because you've been doing it a lot longer. So what is the advice you would give to someone like a young bloke, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, whatever, who wants to get involved in the game?
Don't do it, mate.
Don't do it.
If you have to ask for advice, you're not made for it. But if you're gonna make it in that industry, you're the kind of person that just doesn't care and goes balls deep with everything that you do, because it takes nuts to walk in and go, I'm gonna be a stripper. And then to last as long as someone might say, different ball game. You have to be business minded. But let's just say I say that out of the equation. If I say any advice, don't go in with Magic Mike. Don't go in with 80s rock and roll. And do something maybe a bit unique. Always make sure your physique's on point. And just don't be seedy. That would be my three. That'd be my three best things. Just don't be a seedy guy. No one wants that.
Yeah.
That'd be it.
Agree. Now, in the time that I've also known you, I remember one time when, you know, you started up and coming with us and Top Shelf and we were just working together. And then one day out of the blue, I'm at university and I get a call. And then you tell me, hey man, look, I believe this shit. Hopefully I can tell this openly now, but fucking I'm going on the Bachelorette. And I was like, holy shit.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I was in front of everyone. And then I was just like in a crowd of people and I was like, stop. So yeah, I was like, what? That's fucking awesome. Good on you, man. Yeah. So that's the next thing I wanted to like talk about. Like, how did you even get on the show in the first place? Because I remember you just called me out of the blue and I was like, what? For real?
Yeah. Yeah. So two of my mates were sitting in the bar. I think it was at El Grotto. And ironically, one of my best mates, Matthew Kipps, he's best mates with this Jake Ellis guy. I've never met him. Mm-hmm. But I heard he's meant to be all right. I heard he's meant to be a good dude. So my mate Blake and Kipsy were sitting there and these people were looking for people to join the Bachelor. Like, hey, we're looking for people to be on the Bachelorette Australia. Would you guys like to give it a go? And my friends said wholeheartedly, they were like, no, that's for frauds. No, thank you. Like, we're good. So it's not something that I wouldn't be surprised that they would say, but they were like, I know the guy, cool, this dude. So I get this phone call at work and they're like, hey, you've been selected to go into the Bachelor. Do you want to come for an audition? And I went, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
What was that going through your head when you obviously said, why not? But like, was there someone who you spoke to that persuaded you, or was it just, what was going through your head when you thought, fuck, all right, I got the audition?
I thought, if I do this, I'll get even more women. That's everything that went through my head. I was like, if I do this, get famous, I will get more pussy. And that's exactly what was going through my head at that time, literally. So, of course, I took the call. I was like, yeah, I'll do the audition. I'll get famous from the shit. I've never watched the program either.
Yeah.
I should have watched the program before I went on there. Holy shit.
Yeah. So, what makes you say that?
When I got on there, I didn't realize how... I didn't realize how big it was for a start. And two, I didn't realize what reality TV was actually like what you had to kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just too much for me. I mean, I didn't really gel with it, you know what I mean? It just wasn't my cup of tea.
Okay. So what did they make you do for the audition? I mean, how does even one audition for The Bachelorette? I wouldn't know.
I think it's okay, so it's all psychology. What they'll do is they'll put you into a room with a whole lot of different people. It's actually quite clever. They put you into a room and then they give you different situations. And then they will ask. I was thinking about the other day, they'll put you in these groups and they'll go, all right, cool, let's organize people tallest to shortest. And I think what they do is they look for the people that take charge and they look for the people that return. And they'll get a whole lot of alphas and then a whole lot of beta males and then a whole lot of angry people and then sensitive people. And then and they'll bundle these people into a group based on personality clashes.
Okay.
So I think all of them were really strategic. And then once you pass that first stage, then you get put into a room where they interview you and they ask you questions.
Okay. So what kind of questions were they asking you?
Oh, like, have you ever, what are your partakes on love? Like, very open-ended stuff, you know what I mean?
Interesting.
So what are your partakes on love? Like, do you know who this, I forget what the lady's name was. Was it the chick from the fucking series? I don't know. But they asked her, like, oh, do you think that you could be compatible with this woman? I didn't even know who she was. So I'm going, yeah, no, totally, yeah. Her and I, you know, I love dogs and she loves dogs. You know, everyone is just, unless you've done your homework, everyone's just talking shit like, yeah, no, 100%. Like, this is, yeah, yeah, no, my love is all I've been wanting. Like, when reality, everyone's just a piece of shit. Like, it's so bad.
Okay, so you did the audition, you got the call. I find out you're going on. Obviously, didn't tell anybody. And then all of a sudden, then you're on the show. Like, what was it like? Even did you have to stay all the guys together in one house? Like, what were the rules?
Okay, so they separate you. So you fly over, you do a medical and stuff like that. Make sure that you don't have any kind of diseases. And then they fly you over. And then they segregate you. So I was in a room by myself. So you're in like these little, and you have to have your hoodie down because there's like paparazzi and stuff like that everywhere.
Okay.
So they segregate you into these other rooms. And then we all met each other when they gave us like a briefing before we'd go into the house. So I met all these dudes in a really short period of time. And then boys would be boys. We're not allowed to leave the room. But all of us would sneak out and we'd try and meet each other and stuff like that.
Okay.
And we all snuck out. We all trying to meet each other and like mingling. And then I didn't have anyone in my dorm for ages. And they take your phone, your ID, they take everything. Whoa. So, nothing. So you have no communication with the outside world. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what will happen is they will... They just don't let you communicate or talk, or they just make sure that it's top secret because no one can know, because then the publicity will come out, then it'll ruin the show for everyone, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's how they stop communication, because they'll go, all right, let's just keep the phones away, make sure that no one can contact you. I mean, this means loved ones, family members, brothers, everything. You have no contact.
Okay.
So then they put me in with a guy, ironically, whose personality matched up with mine perfectly. He was in real estate. He's a real estate agent. Then he gets put in my room. And we got like a house before us, myself and my buddy Scott. He did all the Bachelor in Paradise and stuff like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see they put two sales guys in the same room and they match personalities accordingly. It's very clever how they do it. Very, very clever. Very clever.
Okay. So then again, is the show's rolling, they come out. I want to talk about that scene where you rocked up on the first episode. that scene when you rocked up in the life in the Baywatch outfit. Now, personally for myself, I don't know if that was just you asked to do that or that was your recommendation. But when I saw that, the first thing that came to my mind was, that's not you. I was like expecting you to come out in like the full on like blue suit, hair done proper, sunglasses, suspenders, all that stuff. Not come out in a Baywatch suit. So I just, when I was watching that, I was like, what the hell is going on? That's not, it's like, that. So what was the story behind that?
So I've always been the Zac Efron guy. So everyone had like a little theme. So they put you in these themes, and then I was kind of at the last minute. I was like, when I'm on camera, I'm like looking like, bro, I'm freaking out. Cause I'm like, I can't say this, can't say that. So what happened is I'm in this Baywatch outfit and it's freaking cold, man. And I'm walking down the thing and they're expecting me. They're like, all right, Kate, so what are you going to do? You're going to go down there. You're going to tell her you look like Zac Efron, right? And I'm like, no, fuck off. I'm not going to do that. Because I knew then that way I'm going to be the dick. Okay. So if I walked down, I was like, you know what, I'm going to outsmart these producers. But you're never going to outsmart people that have the footage, the audio, and the editing. Like, it's not going to happen.
Okay.
So, I mean, they could make Gandhi look like shit on camera if they wanted to. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I walk down this thing, and I meet her for the first time, and I'm like, I'm in a Baywatch outfit. And I'm going, holy shit, this is on national television. There's no way I'm going to take this seriously. So I did the McGregor walk down the red carpet. You've seen a McGregor walk like this. So I walk down this thing and I go and see her. And she goes, oh, so you're a lifeguard. I went, yeah, fuck, I'm thinking like, no shit. She's going, oh, so you're a lifeguard. I'm looking at my outfit. I'm like, no, this is from fucking Kmart, but whatever. And she asked me, she goes, so what are you meant to be? And I said to her, I was like, I'm David Hasselhoff. And she stopped and she went, oh, shit. And she's kind of looking over at the producers. I couldn't see what they were doing, but I could feel them going, say you look like Zac Efron, you stupid asshole. Say it. Fuck you. Like, I could just hear them, like, their energy, like, say it. We control you. I'm like, I'm David Hasselhoff, baby. And she turns to me and she's looking at the thing. I'm guessing her ear pierce goes off. And she goes, Zac Efron was in Baywatch. So you must be Zac Efron. And then they cut my face going like, yeah, I'm Zac Efron. And then they made it look like I went down there and was trying to get her to say I look like Zac Efron again. It was just, it was strange how they did it. Brilliant, but very strange how they did it. Mm-hmm. So they got me. They got me there. So that would be my lesson. Don't try and outsmart the producers. It doesn't work.
Now, so the episode's airing. How long were you on the show? How long were you on the show for before you left?
I think it was like 4 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
I think I was on there for like 4 or 5 weeks. And then I left after... I think it was 4 weeks or 5 weeks or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So give us some highlights. What went down in those 4 weeks that we didn't get to see on air?
I realized that I kind of realized that what kind of a dude I was. I literally, a light bulb went off in my head and I went, no amount of pussy is worth what I'm going through right now. There is nothing on this earth that is worth going through this, because everyone was just so bitchy on camera. So you'd have a group full of normal, great guys. And a lot of them, I'm like kind of all good with. I'm sure I wish them well. But you'd have a whole group of guys that was so easy going, hey, man, we're all good. And then as soon as the cameras are rolling, it was like just cats just going down. Just like it was insane. I'd never seen this. I'd never seen this before, ever in my life. Mm-hmm. And that made me so uncomfortable that I got all defensive. But it made me kind of realize that I wouldn't sell my soul for fame. That's what it made me realize, I feel. So coming away from that, like, do I regret it? No.
Okay. Is there anything you would have...
Huh?
I was going to say, is there anything maybe you would have done differently?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have. I probably would have kicked up a fuss about the Baywatch shoot, to be honest, though. And I probably wouldn't have been as staunch on the other guys as I was.
Okay. Now, I don't recall you telling me this, but did you ask to leave or was it just like a process?
No, I actually basically, I say that, but I did, but I didn't. I was kind of heading towards, I was like, man, I want to go home. This is fucking shit. Like, and I was saying it to the guys that were running the stuff of the house and things like that. And I think I said it to like one of the producers, like, man, like kick me off or so. I remember saying something to someone, and then I actually did leave on the fourth episode or something like that.
Yeah.
Which was like pretty all good. I was like, oh, sweet. Okay. It was a bit shocking at the time.
Yeah.
But I think like after all of it, you've been in there for 4 weeks with these people that you don't know, sleeping in a random house, getting filmed constantly. It's pretty stressful. It's very, very stressful. So when you leave, you almost feel as if you failed something that you wanted to do anyway. So for me, it was like this mixed bowl of an emotion that I just didn't quite understand. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Understood. So once you were off, the last thing I remember was I got a phone call from you once saying, hey, man, what's up? And I was like, oh, shit. Well, how you been, man? I haven't heard from you in weeks. Like, yeah, I'm in Cairns. I'm fine. So you went over to Cairns.
So what I actually did is I didn't drink on the show because I knew if I drank on the show, I probably would have made a dick out of myself. Not a dick out of myself, but I would have done things that I think that Australia didn't need to see.
Okay.
And you don't know the length of what these people go for. And I think, you know me, after a couple of drinks, I multiply. I get a bit more of myself. There was no need for it. So I figured out that there was going to be if I was to get famous from the show, right, it wouldn't have been a good thing because there would have been so many photos of me just doing rank shit that would have submerged on the internet, like, dude, see this, see that, see this. Because my photos would be out there more than normal people. Well, not normal people, but people that hadn't dabbled in that kind of extroverted lifestyle, modeling and stuff like that. So I was planning on doing a Robert Downey Jr. So I was going to go, yeah, man, that was the old me. I'm off drugs now, but I'm clean. You know what I mean? Like, I don't drink alcohol because I don't want to go, you know, I finished that. That was the old me. So if something was to happen, I could play that card. Everyone else is drinking and having a good time. And it was hard to let loose and stuff without the alcohol. But then when I left the show, they asked me, they were going to pay for my ticket back to Perth. And I said, well, I haven't seen my mum in a long time, so I'll fly to Melbourne instead. I'm already in Sydney. So I fly to Melbourne, I meet up with my mum, say, what's up? And they were like, yeah, no worries, kid, we'll get you your flight. And I was like, no, can you change to Melbourne? They're like, yeah, leave it with us. So then they booked my flight to Perth. They didn't give a shit. They didn't change it to Sydney. So I was like, well, screw you guys. I'm going to go to Melbourne. I mean, they didn't change it to Perth. So I was like, screw you guys. I'm going to go to Melbourne and see my mum.
Mm-hmm.
And then I missed the plane, and then they got a phone call. So I got a phone call, Cade, that you've missed your plane. What exactly has happened? Now these people are shit scared of being sued constantly. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I said to them, I've relapsed. I'm started drinking again. I'm out of control. I feel as if I'm on a downward spiral. Could possibly kill myself at some stage, and then I would hang up the phone. While I was in Sydney hanging out with my mum and having a great time. Oh, no, sorry, Melbourne. So it was a kind of like a, not a fuck you, but it was more so, if you think that I could potentially die, maybe you'll take it easy on the editing. So they did. So it actually was probably not nearly as bad as that they thought it was going to be. So they had all these psychologists calling me up saying, mate, where are you? Where are you? Are you okay? Like, you know, we're freaking out. I mean, they're freaking out about being sued. They're not freaking out about my well-being. Anyway, so I'm flying to Cairns. I'm having a great time in Cairns. Chilled there for a bit. Got some sun. Took a bit of time off work. Eventually, they offered to pay for my ticket back. I sincerely declined. I stayed for a bit longer, then I flew back. And then I had no contact. And when the show aired, then I remember I apologized. I called up the psychologist. I apologized to her and just said, look, I'm really sorry for my behavior. But I felt as if I was a threat, and you might have just taken it a lot easier on my editing. I just did it for me. So sorry about that. And she said to me, she goes, we've never had anyone do that before. So that was kind of, that was like my way of not, I don't think it was as bad as they were going to make it, to be fair. I think I got off lucky. I think I got real lucky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were on it for 4 episodes. You went on there. You made an effort, you know, to actually do it. I got to ask a question, man. If someone just presented you the opportunity today, say, hey, Kate, do you want to go back on The Bachelorette? This time, you know, things that you know, would you do it?
Nah. No way. Nah, fuck that. I'm on better shit now. Yeah. I wouldn't do that again.
Yeah, let's actually talk about that better shit now. You're selling cars now. So,
I am selling cars. Thank you very much, Joseph. I am.
What's the name of that car? There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Sports cars.
That's what I'm talking about. So, if you guys need a brand new McLaren, Mercedes Benz, or a Lamborghini Huracan, you come see me at Platinum Automotive Sales. www.platinumautos.com.au and come and see me. We are located at 198 Collier Road in Bayswater. Thank you.
Smooth.
That's my, a link or whatever.
Yeah. Well, don't worry about that. We'll put it in the video. We'll put it in this video for you when it goes up onto YouTube and Podbean. So anyone who wants to come to you, they can. I'll just put the link up. So let's talk about car, like what got you even into selling cars, man? What was so intriguing about it?
Ooh, always loved sports cars since I was younger, and I was doing it for a long period of time. Had problems at other dealerships I've been with that got in trouble with the police ultimately, and had a few dealerships shut down, tried them other different places. Then I was personal training for a while. I was teaching like box fit and stuff like that. And then during COVID, I found a good opportunity with the spot that I'm in. And it's like a family there, which has been sweet. You know, your ideas are heard, and you make really great money, and you're doing what you love, which is, you know, driving really flash cars and talking about flash cars. That's what I love to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's
it. What was that situation that you put up? This is, no one else is really going to know this unless they follow you on Instagram. But what was that whole situation you put up the other day about the fish tank? That's been on my mind lately. What was that situation with the fish tank?
Oh, man. Oh, it's like another world in there. So I actually have to study my fish to figure out which ones are the alphas and which ones are the betas in my fish tank. So I'm looking at my fish. I'm like meant to be doing work, and I'm like, dark one with stripes seems to be flourishing today. Scratching himself on the rocks. I could have some kind of disease in the tank. Like, I'm taking notes constantly because I've had 4 fish die, and that's about $120 worth of fish just gone like that. So, I know. And, you know, obviously there's the grieving process as well of, you know, losing, especially because I name my fish. Okay. But yeah, we've got a fish tank in the wall now. I'm losing a few, but it's still good. It's nice to look at.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's good to hear. Now, when you're working at Platinum Motors, man, like, because you've been selling cars for quite some time. So you've worked a lot in negotiation. So what are some like quick tips or quick breakdowns you could give to people if they want to get into negotiating a car?
I don't think people do it. It's not like it used to be anymore. Like, people don't really do it. People say that they go, oh, you shoot low and then you go high and things like that. A lot of it is fixed price nowadays, like because of things like car sales and, you know, Auto Trader and, I mean, Red Book. I mean, they give you somewhat of an indication of what they're worth. But if you see 2 cars are exactly the same, so let's just say a Golf is a white one and a red one. One's got 200,000 Ks, one's got 150,000 Ks. The 150,000 Ks is going to be worth more money. But if they're around the same price, you got to look at which one is the better value for money. So when you can actually compare them, and what most people do is they go low to high and they'll search, and they'll pick the car mainly on, you know, what they can afford. So if you can see it that close, it's kind of really hard to advertise them for too much money or buy them for too little.
Okay.
Because what people don't understand is they go, all right, so where are the dealers getting these cars? Where are they getting these cars so cheap? If I go in and I want to ask for, you know, $3,000 off a car, where are the dealers buying these cars $3,000 cheaper? So a lot of it is fixed price, but I would say, I'd say just go in and just, I'd say maybe just pay the money for it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the what would you say was the most expensive car you've ever sold?
I think it was a Ferrari 458. It was in my first week of selling cars. It was
what's the story behind that?
Yeah, it was a Ferrari. Hey.
What's the story behind that selling that Ferrari?
Oh, it was like an old lead. So I was going through old dead leads, and I was like, "Hey, man, remember me?" And they go, "Oh, you know, the last sales guy, I was dealing with him." I was on my first week and I sold this Ferrari to a guy and just, I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. But I was negotiating numbers with him for about, like, I think it was like 2 days straight. And I think it was just the fact that I was giving him attention. He eventually just bought it. So he bought it full whack. So, yeah, that was my most expensive car. I think that was like $400,000+.
Wow.
But I mean, that's real estate money, you know? Yeah. But
damn. So how do you and your boss, like, how do you find these cars and then you put them into your lot and then you sell them? How does that work?
A lot of people bring their cars to us. So they'll go, oh, can you sell my car for me?
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that's pretty popular nowadays. So if someone goes, man, I can't be bothered with, you know, people coming in and checking out the car, taking test drives and stuff, like, I don't want them to come to my house. Like, they'll just give me the car and they go, can you sell it for me? I go, yeah, sweet. How much do you want? They go, I want this. And I go, yep, go sell it for them. And then I can just upsell. So that's a lot of what happens with more the high-end stuff, because people that are selling Corollas, they're not as busy as people that are usually selling, you know, Lamborghinis. So they'll kind of give it to guys like us that'll know the car, know the knowledge, know the market, know what to pay, and know how to negotiate. So they'll sell to us rather than give it to us to sell on their behalf rather than anyone else. But obviously you get like your old school stuff, like your trades, you can buy them from Eastern States, auctions, that kind of stuff, whatever it needs to be. Even buy them from other dealers. You know, if they can't sell it over where they are, you try and sell in your area. It can be anything. You got to get creative with it, you know?
Okay. So what's your favorite car that you got in the lot at the moment? Personally, for me, like last time I came in, you had that nice Aston Martin, man. What was that? Was that the DB9? Was that the DB9?
That was a DB9. I still got that one, actually. I would say, what would be my favorite? I had an FD RX7 Type A. Type A Spirit R, which was about $100,000. I like that car.
Yeah.
Just because those are my second favorite cars of all time. But I would probably say the Ferrari F430 that we've got at the moment would be my favorite. Or probably the DB9, to be fair. I agree with you on DB9. It's class, that car.
Yeah, that's
absolutely class. I'll for sure.
That's a
really nice car.
That's a beautiful car. It's probably one of my favorites. It gives me that. It's literally the James. I think it's one of the James Bond cars. I'm pretty sure that was in the Casino Royale or something like that.
That was anyway, 2006 Aston Martin DBS. Similar car, different body shape.
Yeah. Very nice. Now, so just moving on, man. So, as you know, you train in the same gym as me, man. You've been training in here for quite some time now, training with Coach Volcano. You're not going to lie, you're looking pretty sharp, man. So I wanted to spend like the rest of this podcast talking about fighting, man. Like, I know that you've had a bit of a background with fighting before. Like, you did judo for quite some time. You've been doing a lot of boxing. You've been working a lot with Jackson. And so is there something that's what's like re-sparked, you know, that motivation to get back into fighting? What was it?
Oh man, like this is literally got me here. I'm like, dude, we should do I could do a whole podcast on fighting. Okay. And now you're just gonna get me on a tangent, man, because dude, first and foremost, this is a fighting podcast, and this is what I love more than anything, like in regards okay. to like freaking cars and like celebrity, whatever the fuck's going on there. But Jake Paul and Ben Askren press conference launched today. What do we think of that? What do we think?
No, okay. Well, if we want to get into that situation. What we're going to say is I like what Jake Paul's doing. He's a troll. He's a hype man. He's getting people interested. But I've seen his videos. I've watched his Jake Paul. I watched his fight against Nate Robinson. I watched the fight he did when he fought Deji. He has definitely improved. He's got a legitimate skill set. I understand that. But it's just, it's like his pedigree in terms of boxing. Like, you can have all the money in the world, you can have all the coaches in the world, but I just don't believe you're going to beat Ben Askren, who's been fighting since he was 13 years old. Yes, he was a wrestler, he was a former Olympian, he's had one championship, he's fought in the UFC, he's fought in Bellator, I think he's a Bellator champion as well. He's got that pedigree, but the fact that, oh yeah, he's just a wrestler, yes, he's done a lot of striking as well. It's not like we're talking super, super high level boxing, but it's definitely more enough to beat a guy who's only been doing it for a few years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the skill set of Jake Paul is for first and foremost, I'd like to say I think I could fuck Jake Paul up, just saying.
Yeah, fair enough, okay.
But anyway, so basically his skill set's really good, but I think Ben Askren beats him if he gets into dirty boxing. You know, okay. if he can sit on top of him and work the body, tire him out, because he's got way more experience. I mean, and however many different sports. And this kid is, what this guy has done is he's opened up a can of worms, because if he beats Ben Askren, that's great for him. That's awesome. He's done it. But now who does he fight next? Because he's opened up himself a fucking worm. Like, because the guys that he's going to have to fight now, eventually someone's going to go, I'm sick of this clown, I'm just going to take him out. And someone's actually going to come in and just absolutely just nail this kid. Yeah. And I can speak from my experience where I go, when I'm fighting guys like Jackson, who's ranked number 40 in the world, like number 40 in the world in the WBC, and he's not as tall as I am and not as fat as I am, but he's the level of boxing that I have to spar with him is so different, you know, between where I stand and how fit he is, how well he knows where his feet are, how to move around. I can see that level of, I mean, this much difference between us two. But then you think, how big is the difference between this guy and someone that actually just goes, all right, cool, what are you going to actually box someone that knows how to box?
Yeah.
And I mean, when that person, when he's just going to, I reckon he's just going to get out the woodwork, man. He's going to cop it. He's gonna hurt. Yeah. He's gonna, and Logan Paul's going about the right way, because he's actually going, do I have a chance of beating Floyd Mayweather? And everyone's like, no. And he's like, oh, well, fuck, I'll give my best go and get paid. Whereas this other guy's being a prick. You know what I mean?
It's just, what is it that he's got what we call a puncher's chance, you know? I mean, getting hit by a heavyweight is different to getting hit by a lightweight, obviously. So I don't know how they're doing the Logan Paul versus Mayweather fight. There's been a lot of speculation around that. Like, people were saying the reason why it's been pushed back was because there wasn't enough ticket sales. But out of Logan Paul's camp, they were saying that wasn't the case. There was a leak inside the camp or something like that. And I'm hearing a lot of mixed reviews, but you're taking people. It's just this new stream of boxing that's been opened up. Not just opened up, it's been around for a little bit of time, but it's now like exploded. Like, it started with YouTuber boxing with what was that guy's name? Oh, KSI and Joe Weller, and now it's branched out into a mainstream. Like, yeah, I like what Logan Paul and, you know, and Jake Paul are doing, but what they're doing is very it's not legitimized yet, because the only way they want to more legitimize themselves is they were to actually fight real boxers, like actual boxers, people who have been doing it for a long, long time. And then again,
it's a bit tacky though, isn't it? It's the whole thing's fight. It is very tacky, I feel. It's kind of taking the class out of boxing.
That's what that, that was the argument that I'm hearing. But the thing is, these people are drawing in numbers, and at the end of the day, boxing is the money sport, man. You know, the highest selling boxing pay-per-view we ever had, that we've had for quite some time, was Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson. And then we got to ask how much of that was accredited to Jake Paul versus Nate Robinson. Mm. Because if you like it or not,
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, you can be an outsider, you can be a purist or whatever, but the way things go, like, if you're not a progressive person, shit changes. And what's interesting is all these guys that I went on the show with, now they're all doing a Jake Paul and they're all boxing each other.
Really?
So, yeah, so all the guys that that I was on the show with, they're now all doing a boxing thing. So, like, one guy before this guy's like, big bachelorette and celebrity card, and they're all boxing each other for charity or some shit now. But, I mean, they're going at each other the same way as that real, like, just really mean to each other. And they're just, like, building it up, you know? So it's not really so much... Is it about the charity or is it about, like, where I'm like, I'm a little confused, you know, but I mean, good on them for getting in there, man. I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy getting there.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of respect for anyone who, in general, on a professional level, even an amateur level, they wants to get in the ring or getting in a cage and fight. Like, it's definitely good. But, like, one thing that just, it can be sometimes just can be a little bit irritating is when people are going through such huge lengths to piss each other off and don't have the skills to back it up. I mean, if you're gonna walk, like the saying goes, if you're gonna talk the talk, you better be ready to walk the walk. And that's what I kind of feel like to some of them. So anyway, to finish off the point, really, I mean, if when it comes to Ben Askren versus Jake Paul, I hope, you know, that Jake Paul really does. I mean, he's been talking so much smack and, you know, backed up against Nate Robinson, but this is the next step, you know.
Yeah.
And this is so. Hopefully, he does come in there on his A game on fight day, and we'll see what happens. Really, but my money's on Ben Askren for the time being. What about you?
My money's on Ben Askren. I hope he shuts this kid up. I really do. I appreciate how he knocked out Nate Robinson. That's like that was a beautiful hook. But God. That just press conference was just so bad.
It's just
made me uncomfortable. It didn't flow like McGregor flows, you know. Hey, who the fuck is that guy? Everyone laughs. It was very forced and very like, you know what it felt like. You know when someone makes fun of you, and you don't quite have a comeback, and you'll go, but your mum did that. You know, and you don't have something. It just doesn't flow. That's what I felt that whole press conference was, you know?
Yeah.
I just think, I mean, what do I know?
I mean, like, here's the thing, though. It's money. They buy it. People would buy it. And people are going to. And that's what's going to happen. Come April... I can't remember the date they're actually fighting, but it's probably going to... I actually predict it's going to be a massive, massive in terms of pay-per-views. And if Jake wins in some parallel universe, people are going to have to really start paying attention to him because, you know, if you want to sell, bring him in because it's the crowd that he brings with him. Anyway, man, let's finish this off. I just got one more question for you, bruv.
Yeah.
Earlier on, you just talked about this, this card of the celebrities or like the Bachelorette and they're all trying to get involved in boxing. Is that what you're trying to get involved into right now? Is there anything you're preparing for?
I tried to. I sent one of the guys I was in the house with a message. I just said, man, it's because someone pulled out of his fight and they've all been on a 10-week training camp. I said to him, I'll name him Tim. He's actually, I don't mind the kid. I was like, yeah, man, I'm happy to, you know, your guy pulled out. I'm walking around about 90 kilograms. I'm a lot bigger than I was when we first met. This guy's probably about 6'2", 6'3". And then he's at 102 kilograms. So if I was going to, like, I said I was happy to take the fight. So I would do it at 100. Oh, sorry, he'd be around 100 kilograms. I'd find him at 90 kilograms at 4 weeks' notice. I mean, I'd find him on 2 days' notice. I don't give a fuck. So, I mean, that's if that happens, it happens. I haven't heard anything. I think my following isn't big enough to really create any kind of, it's a lose-lose for anyone else. Whereas for me, it's a win-win. You know, if I fight someone that's bigger than me, then it's a win-win because either way, I'm going to look like a hero. So I think it's not really, it doesn't make sense for them. It makes sense for me, but it doesn't make sense for them. But I honestly just want to fight. So, I mean, if it's not going to be that, it's going to be some kind of corporate rumble where I can fight other guys that are in the same position as me, working, you know, almost 80-hour weeks and fighting guys there. And once I do that, then I'll go straight to amateur boxing. And then never know, maybe one day I'll go pro. So we don't know. It's what I love to do, and it's been a big passion of mine for years now, years and years. So I'm just excited to just do what I love, you know.
Good to hear, man. Thanks again for coming on, brother. I really appreciate it.
No worries, bro. Anytime. Lots of love.